Podcasting 2.0 for March 11th, 2021, episode 28. We got the cat by the tail. Always the cryptic messages, always. It's Friday once again, time for a board meeting of Podcasting 2.0 as we discuss developments around podcastindex.org with special guests today. Very excited. I'm Adam Curry in Austin, Texas, and in Alabama, the only man who can chase a runaway SQL query, my friend on the other end, Dave Jones.
I have so much work to do now. I have to... I got to go in every GitHub repo that we have. I've got to change, do a search and replace and change subscribe to follow. Freaking Apple, I swear. It's what everybody's doing now.
Oh, man. Okay, well, you're scratching off the scab right away. I'd kind of gotten over this, what happened earlier in the week.
I knew this was going to trigger you so hard.
Ladies and gentlemen, Apple has upgraded their podcast app, and in 15 years, we have the huge development. We've changed subscribe to follow, and the press went nuts.
at least we can hug. CDC says we can hug now, so it's not all bad.
I have a story about follow, but first... Here's what I found extremely disappointing.
Okay.
Now, I did not hear or read of a single news or journalistic outlet that was taking all of this great new information. We can now have more episodes in the Apple Podcast app, and we've changed subscribe to follow. No one said, hey, did you guys consider the podcast namespace at all? Have you thought about it? No one ever asked these questions. What the fuck?
It is
journalistically malfeasance. Bankrupt. It's bankrupt.
Everyone's malfeasance.
I mean, news is so used to sucking off these companies when they release a new phone, mainly. Oh, and they love reviewing the apps. Oh, I have the beta. I'm reviewing the app. And no one says the simple things. And, I'm flabbergasted by that. Anyway.
So the idea that subscribe is confusing, I fully agree with Todd Cochran. I don't think that's an issue.
No,
YouTube subscribe all the time.
Yes, everyone gives examples of podcast apps, and no one, again, journalism, no one came up with, YouTube has arguably the most successful published subscription mechanism used today is YouTube that literally says subscribe. But, go ahead.
A quick way to around this. Like, you hit the subscribe button, and if it asks you if you want to pay money for it, just say no.
It's such a non-issue, and it's even stupider that, Spotify has already been doing this. Yeah, they're so smart. Let me tell you, let me give the people a little podcast history. Again, something I didn't read. It would have been worthwhile as long as you're sucking off everybody on the follow button. In 2007, we were in San Francisco with Podshow, and we were building a podcast network, which I later learned you really can't monetize. Story for a different day. And we were really only doing the advertising, aggregating part, and pre-financing, essentially kind of running it like a record label, I guess. And we heard about a competitor, and this competitor was doing something really cool because they had an interface, which I got to see once. They had an interface that was all built in Flash. Now, mind you, this was early days for this type of interface, particularly with multimedia. And it was a publish and a listening platform, both. Wow, okay, this is really smart. And I was, I knew we had the talent, which was our game, but I felt that an interface could definitely, would be important.
You were worried.
No, I wasn't worried.
Okay.
But I was prepared. And they never released. And when I finally saw what they had not released, they had pivoted. And the one thing I liked about their podcast interface at the time was instead of subscribe, which was a discussion that went on forever in the beginning of podcasting. So in my mind, this discussion would just do it, which is typical podcasting 2.0. Let's do all the steps over again. Just now we know the outcome so we can compress the timeline a little bit, which is good. It's taking place. But they had changed subscribe to follow. And I'd that was the first time that was ever used. And I really thought that was a brilliant way to do it because we could never come up with the right wording. But this was also the days when it meant right-click on this orange icon, copy the link, and then paste it into your subscribe box. And they pivoted. Odeo went away, and they took that exact same technology, and it became Twitter. And they carried over the whole feed concept. It was, in fact, RSS microblogging. It was, in fact, built on RSS. Which they, you know, hence the fail whale. And they had to completely retool that, but they kept the follow button. That's how old this is, and that's the origins of it. It comes from podcasting.
I don't know if anybody or how many people remember the first days of Twitter.
No one ever bothers to ask.
Awful. It was awful. The interface was terrible. The service went down multiple times a week. It was only SMS.
Oh, yeah, the fail whale, baby. Yeah, it's SMS. Text messaging. Yeah. That's how it started. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was garbage. Why did they switch? What made them bail out on podcasting? Was there some event that said, that rippled through the news that said, okay, podcasting is overblown, yes, it's going to fail? Yes.
Yeah, there were two things that took place.
Okay.
One is YouTube. YouTube was just coming out. This was before 2008, I think, or 2009 was when they were purchased. And the second thing was Facebook. Facebook was coming along, and they just went from you had to be .edu to whatever, and you could sign up. And I think they brilliantly saw the opportunity, and they had the infrastructure. It was the basic RSS infrastructure, which did not scale for what they wanted to do, and I can see why.
Yeah,
but makes sense. That was it, and they pivot. And I think they were actually it was one of these they built it internally and were using it and liked it. That's the most organic form of development.
It's amazing how that they actually succeeded because of how rocky that first couple of years was of the service being so unreliable and so weird. Like it's really stunning that Twitter actually survived that time period.
Well, remember, they were dying by success because they had Ashton Kutcher, they brought in Demi Moore, they had the whole Planet Hollywood celebrities. They immediately understood the power of the celebrity tweet, and the celebrities caught it. They immediately, like, holy crap. And you know, the whole follow thing really fit in well with the cult status of celebrities. Follow me. I mean, this was a perfect combination. Can't say.
Oh, okay. So I'm seeing this now. So the follow thing really is all about celebrity.
Because absolutely.
You don't, because if you're talking about, to me, subscribe in a podcast fits perfectly. Because you're subscribing. When you subscribe to something, it means you automatically get delivered. Like you subscribe to a newspaper or you subscribe to a magazine. You get it delivered to your mailbox automatically, and you don't have to think about it.
Correct.
Follow. You don't follow a magazine. Like, what about the word follow tells you that you're going to get something automatically? Unless you're talking about celebrities, because people do follow celebrities. It's like, oh, I follow. You know, what do you use? Ashton Kutcher. You know, I follow.
No one says, yeah, I follow the podcasting 2.0 podcast.
Yeah, nobody says that.
I subscribe to that. Yeah, I'm subscribed. So it's meaningless. It was very disappointing. It tells me that Apple has punted and they're going to do their Podcast Plus or whatever they're going to do. Or they're doing a 1-2 punch with some other stuff. I don't know. I could not believe how disappointing this release was. It must just be a maintenance release because they're working on something else. And they're clearly not interested in the exciting development in the podcast ecosystem. In fact, We're doing a great exercise, partially at podcastindex.social, but on GitHub, to explain, create a document that explains podcasting 2.0. And so this has been interesting to look at the document that kind of came together. You wrote it. There's been some other pieces of input from people, some pull requests, but it doesn't really matter. The brain trust kind of put together what we were going to put in that document.
That document, mostly I released it to be community editable or whatever.
Yeah.
Mostly because I just got so tired of writing. I've been doing so much documentation lately.
It was time for you to hand the baton over.
So I'm
rewriting a lot of it, not all of it. And I've taken a different course. I think what happened is we didn't say, who is this really for? Who is this document for? The person who had the best answer, actually, inadvertently, was James Cridlin. He said, I want a place that journalists can understand.
And that is a good, point.
So this comes into my rant. It's like, well, if we can't make journalists understand and report on it, we're failing. If we can make journalists understand it and report on it, every single podcaster will be able to understand what's going on here.
That's a really good point.
So in my writing, I refer to legacy apps, Apple and Spotify. It's true.
My God, thank you for doing that, because you know what pisses me off so much?
I know. Go ahead.
In the IT world, is when people take something that works perfectly fine and does and serves millions and millions of people on a daily basis with something, and they call it legacy. Like it's old and beat up and full of Botox, and like it's a piece of crap. Like that is so and I love that you did that. That's beautiful. It's a turnaround.
It's the only, and I'm writing this sentence about, you know, these new features. I'm like, oh, because I wanted to say, you know, your podcasting 2.0 is backwards compatible with legacy apps.
I love it. That's awesome.
It's all about the positioning. That's coming together. And actually, it's with the keeper right now. So you know that shit's getting looked at. She's the communications professional. There's tons of stuff. Go ahead.
Let me throw something in here real quick, because this fits in. So it fits into the talk of legacy apps. I tweeted this morning on our account, which we don't usually tweet, but I sent out a tweet and I feel pretty strongly about this. I started thinking about it when I woke up this morning. One thing that is, I'll say, that's almost shameful, that more podcast apps have not adopted the transcript tag.
Oh, absolutely.
And I mean that. I mean that to the bottom of my heart.
By the way, from an ADA perspective, it'll probably be mandatory at some point in the future.
Yes. You know, so many of these podcast companies and apps and that kind of thing, they're so, invested in I don't even know what the word is. I don't want to say woke, but like a modern care for things like the climate and all these things that we associate with progressive thinking, considering minority groups and that kind of thing. The fact that so few apps have adopted the transcript tag, which is immediately helps people with disabilities and people trying to learn another language.
Yes,
it's almost shameful.
Yeah, you put that actually in the description in the document about, and I hadn't even considered the learning about a second language, and it's really true. And it's
we met a guy when me and my wife met in Moscow, Russia.
Okay, Dave, now you're blowing my mind, brother.
Sorry, that's a different, story.
I usually spot the spook. Okay, go for it.
Well, who is it, me or her?
Comrade Jones. Tell me the story.
we met on a trip to Russia, and at the time we had a translator, And his name was, Yvonne. And Yvonne said that he learned English. He spoke very good English. He said that he learned English when he spent a couple of years as an exchange student in the U.S., and he learned it from watching cartoons on television with subtitles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's how the Dutch have all movies subtitled. That's how they learn English, too. And they're very proficient.
Yeah. I really think that if you are a podcast app, and I'm the type of guy that's like, hey, you do whatever you want. I mean, it's free market, free everything. But I really do think that tag is such low-hanging fruit that would serve so much good in the community that I do feel like it's worthy of being labeled as shameful that so many have not done it.
At last count, 13.2% of all podcast feeds had the namespace adoption. So it's totally possible. We have a number of hosting companies already pumping them out and a lot of apps that understand them. And the way to do this, and this is the constant issue with podcasting, the players, as in the players in the game, app developers, hosting companies, they always forget the power of the content. The podcast creators are your users too, and they will drive this. They will drive adoption. I mean, when I started pushing the chapter images rotating, it became a thing.
Yeah. You know, yeah, the content drives everything.
Yes. Well, that's often forgotten. And, well, anyway, this is why the entire podcasting 2.0 is so exciting, as it kind of centralizes around podcastindex.org right now. And one of the first things that happened for us as we started this project less than 6 months ago, and the two stated goals were to preserve podcasting as a platform for free speech and to retool podcasting as a platform for value for all the participants. And we had the Lightning Network in mind. We had already, I'd done a real deep dive and I was understanding it. And I was able to convince you, and you foolishly went, oh, okay, I'm sure Adam is right.
Now you called me when I was driving up to North Alabama.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Meet up with a couple of guys. And that was like a 2 hour phone call.
I think I was in my car too, wasn't I? I was in my car too for some reason. I can't remember why.
I think so.
I think Tina had some call or something. Yeah.
Yep, and you laid it all out. You're like, here's the way I think this could work, and I think it could be like this. And that was like a marathon call.
So we basically, jammed this value for value, or this value tag into the namespace as we'll see when it really goes in, but let's experiment with it. And then on podcastindex.social, I get this ping from, I was searching around. That's what it was. I was searching around who can do this stuff, this Lightning. I'd figured out KeySend, and so I was trying to figure out who was doing KeySend. And I came across Sphinx Chat. I think something on their GitHub, not even the actual app. Mm-hmm. And I was like, God, this look, from what I'm reading here, it sounds like, and I think they even had a line on the GitHub, great for podcasting too. I was like, oh, okay, these guys, it's like soon to include podcasting. And like, holy crap, these guys kind of get it. So I think I emailed the info at stackwork.com I think that's what it was, or info at sphinx.chat. And then I got a ping back from one of our guests who we have today. Who I wanted to bring in since we've been chatting away, and Dave, you and I can have this board meeting forever, but we did invite other members of the community from Sphinx Chat. Please welcome to Podcasting 2.0, Evan Feenstra and Paul Itoy.
Hey guys.
Happy to be here.
You're as bad at intros as I am.
Yeah. I think let's start with Paul first, because Paul was the one who contacted me. Paul, why don't you tell me a bit about how you found, I guess, that email, and then what you're thinking, and shoot, why don't you two guys just tell us what the hell you're doing?
Well, I was, first of all, good to be here. I went into full on podcast listening mode while you guys were talking, because that's how I'm used to hearing here, and I'm sitting here pretty much going, whoa, wait, I got to talk now. So
lulled you to sleep.
I was washing dishes over there.
Paul, it's just like Clubhouse. You're on stage. Okay, you can talk now.
It's like, wait, but I didn't raise my hand. I remember getting your email, I think around the exact same time. It really was amazing timing that I found your podcast social. And some of the first features we did with Sphinx was around podcasters, because if you think about what we're doing, and just for people out there who don't know us, but we've been chatting for a while now with you guys, is we really wanted to bring the ability to fund media and fund content without having to go through the middleman. And so when I think I heard you speak on one of the podcasts you were on, I can't remember, it was a while ago, I just said, man, this guy gets it. And I got onto your Mastodon, and then at some point we're chatting. So that was great.
Right. It probably would be handy if you could explain a little bit about Sphinx Chat and how podcasting integrates into that, just for people who've never seen it before.
Yeah, so Sphinx Chat is the ability to communicate over the Lightning Network. And so what's different, and a lot of people ask, and you guys have talked to your listeners about Lightning Network, but what's different about this is that everyone has tried to do payments on top of the free internet. So you got a website, now you can go pay with your credit card. That's always stuck out as a sore thumb. With Lightning Network, you're really adding the ability to communicate and send content over a payment network. So payments are really just native to the whole experience. And that's pretty cool. And that's what, when, similar to you guys, when you were doing that marathon call, I read the white paper and said, oh my God, this is really big and really different. And then people like Evan, who designed a lot of the systems itself, basically made it all happen. So you can listen to podcasts, you can talk to people, you can talk to your friends, you can join these tribes, and we'll do a lot more going forward.
You know, what I enjoyed the most when we actually hopped on a call, Paul, and I think we spoke for an hour, maybe longer, just philosophically, and it clicked so deeply right away. And I've even stolen some of the things you said, because, you know, I know the inherent issues with advertising and creating content, and how that by definition limits you in what you can say. You certainly can't talk about a competing product favorably, just as one small example, or have a wrong political opinion that might not fit with the advertiser. And you boiled that down for me into advertising is censorship. And I was like, okay, just like when you were listening to our shows, I said, yeah, this guy really gets it. And in addition to that, it's like, as I was learning the Bitcoin community, and certainly those who are in Lightning development, everybody wants to get their fair piece, and they want to get paid. In fact, one of the things you and I talked about is, hey, you know, if out of this comes one or two huge Silicon Valley multi-billionaires, then we fucked it up big time. But so that led to another quote of yours that I use, if free is over. And that's, I think, core to what Sphinx Chat is all about, as you talk about it being really an application that sits on top of a payment network and uses that as the vehicle for all these payloads of content.
Yeah, and I think what we talked about in that first call is, as it, freedom, free sounds great, right? And humans are hardwired to respond to free differently. But free, when it comes to technology, turned out to be the most expensive business model out there if you value your time. And that's the problem. We've all accidentally, and without really intending, traded our attention and our time. And Bitcoiners talk a lot about scarce assets. And so what's the one thing everyone talks about you never get more of is time. And so without really setting out to do it, and I don't think there was some conspiracy theory. And then, you and I were around for the early days of the internet. No one set out and planned, hey, I'm going to build this free service, I'm going to get everyone to pay attention to it. I was there. We were all trying to make money, but there was no money to be made on the internet, right? There were you'd be crazy to put a credit card into a website in the mid-90s, right? It felt totally unnatural, right? And so if we had had Bitcoin or an internet currency at that time, who knows how it would have turned out. But if you have these services and they are free, they will grow. And someone has to pay for it sometime. And advertisers raise their hand and said, hey, we'll pay for it. how do I know? I worked in advertising in the 90s. So
another touch point.
Believe me, these guys had no idea. There was no plan. There was nothing. It was just where eyeballs will go, pay for eyeballs. Where's attention, we'll pay for attention. Buy my widget, you know. So that is, I think, are the opportunity that we are all sitting at now. And I think this is where podcasting really is the crux of a historic change from what we accidentally got into versus what we have going forward. So, and you guys rag on Apple and stuff for being so out of date with podcasting, but I view that as a positive because it is so ripe for change. And what you guys are doing is kind of unlocking the dam that is going to allow some of these changes to take place. And serendipitously, here's Bitcoin, here's Lightning at the exact same time. We really have this opportunity. So you guys better not screw it up.
We're going to screw it up.
We'll screw up lots of stuff, no doubt about it. So when Dave and I first... Well,
that's why we have Evan, you guys.
I'll fix the bugs.
So that's a perfect time to bring Evan in. As we were just getting this initial, the initial front to back working from podcasterwallet.com and having the feeds show up and tribes automatically created and tons of stuff. Conversations were really with Paul, and so we were talking, the three of us, but then there was this magical thing that would happen, and it turned out that magical thing had a name. Evan, who's one of my favorite kind of developers because he's a musician. He plays, guitar, saxophone, trumpet, which I know is like that confirms my software development is a science, but also it's really big art. So Evan, it's really, really good to meet the guy who's been doing a lot of that behind the scenes, so to speak.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to work on this stuff. I've always kind of seen micropayments in general being the real sort of potential in Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and the thing that can really change the internet, because exactly like you guys talk about with your value for value, when you're streaming money one way and you're streaming content back the other way, you don't necessarily need that credit card number, right? You don't need a username. You don't need a password.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't even know how many users we have on Sphinx. And that's a good thing. I mean, there's not even a way to know. In fact, this release where we just put out earlier today is adding private Lightning channels to Sphinx.
Ooh, nice.
Which means you won't even be able to
see the routing.
Right. You won't even be able to scan the graph to see who's using Sphinx.
Oh, I'm sure Marnix is going to love that. He's going to be on the message board. He's always bitching about I can't contact Sphinx nodes.
Hey,
So like it's for more that gives more privacy to users, obviously, but it also means for us, we don't have to manage all these identities and these relationships with users necessarily. I mean, why should my online identity be mediated by some database in some data center, right? Like if I want to, I can do that. But also if I want to, I can just run my identity at home on a Raspberry Pi. So,
I've been ever since I was introduced to the tribes concept and an important part of that is boosting, which is just fucking phenomenal idea. I've been trying to communicate to our developers that once we have some infrastructure in place with Lightning Network, how much complexity goes away in creating community features. Exactly what you just said, Evan. You don't need to maintain a database. Your authentication can be built into your node ID. All these things can just happen seamlessly. But I think that's one of those things you really have to see it and experience it to understand it and believe it.
Exactly.
Right.
How does that play into with the Sphinx? Like Sphinx Relay is something that I've been pretty intrigued by. I know that a lot of people are setting that up on a Raspberry Pi. I mean, how much, it's a little bit of a brain twister to think about that whole thing. But if you set up a Sphinx Relay, just for my knowledge and for anybody else who's curious, I mean, what can you not do? And what, I mean, are you a full participant in Sphinx Chat, just like you would be if you were hosted?
Yeah, that's all a hosted node is. It's just a relay running in the cloud. So okay. If you set it at home, you're basically storing your messages at home and your, you know, chat records at home and everything.
It really became apparent to me how it worked, you know, because when you just have your Sphinx Chat app and you just connect it to Sphinx Chat, you know, whatever, it's working. And then when I set one up on my Raspi Blitz at home, and the minute my full node total came up, that's when it hit me. Oh, it's just a wallet. Yeah. It you know, it has elements of all these other wallets. For instance, ThunderHub, you can, you know, it's a little different, but you can send a chat message with one Satoshi to another ThunderHub user. And that's when it boing, it just went, the lightning bolts went off. And from what, and maybe this, I'd really like to talk about scalability for a second, because it's really important for the overall rollout of what we're doing. First of all, I have a feeling that we broke you a little bit, but that really became advantageous because we learned so much about, you know, the number of transactions, how this would be working. I know you guys were working really hard behind the scenes for weeks and weeks and weeks. And from what I understand, one of the most exciting developments to come out of that is for scalability, is there'll be different ways to host virtual nodes. Am I saying this correctly?
Right. It's part of this.
Yeah, go ahead. You take it.
Well, I was going to say it's part of the private channel thing, being able to put a private channel node behind another routing node, but also potentially like a virtual private node. Maybe you can explain it better, Paul. I'm so deep into the code.
Yeah, that didn't help, Evan.
No, thanks, Evan.
Yeah, I think what we were talking about before is the different ways to run it. So maybe taking a step back is, think of the app, the Sphinx app on your phone, as a remote control. So just the way you could control your TV from, you know, your, if you have an iPhone, from your Apple remote, the Sphinx app on your phone is really just talking to Relay that's running on a Lightning node.
Right.
So Relay is just translating the finger tapping on your phone into things that Lightning can understand. And so Relay translates that into a Lightning message, and then it sends from there out onto the Lightning network to everyone else. It looks just like a normal Lightning transaction. Could be a payment. It could be an invite to a video call. It could be a message. The whole point is you don't know, and no one should know, right? You increase the privacy set of what's happening. And so you don't want stuff that looks like a payment to look different from something that looks like just a message. And if you have, and I think we actually can't tell, but if you happen to be using one of our routing nodes on the Lightning network, we have forwarded well over 350,000 messages in the last 3 months.
Damn.
So far.
Wow.
Just alone.
That's incredible.
And that's not the counting the minutes that are being sent to you guys.
Yeah,
we're
seeing like 10,000 minutes a month.
That's awesome.
The last 10,000 transactions.
Well, that's going to grow with what Ed and Tom and the rest of the guys just did. So there's several people working on this behind the scenes too. So just we couldn't have everyone on, but so back to that thing. So you have remote control, you have relay translating, then you have Lightning, all of these messages and all of these transactions bouncing around the peer-to-peer Lightning network. And so think of the Lightning network as just a constellation of these computers that are talking to each other using the Lightning protocol. And you're sending tiny amounts of Bitcoin with every transaction or message that goes through that network. And you're paying your freight. There's tiny, tiny fees, thousands of a penny or even a millisat, right? Which I don't even know what the unit of that is, a penny right now. But you're paying minuscule amounts, but you are paying. And what that does is, I think of it like those, it's like an immune system where free gets in there, and free equals abuse. Free is denial of service. Free is spam. And then once you have all those things, then you need somebody to pay for it. That opens the door to centralization and advertising and all the censorship, and you end up in the same place we are now.
Oh, I am writing down free is abuse as another one I'm going to steal from you. Thank you very much. Beautiful. Yeah. Okay.
So that to me, and this is where just, and this is goes back to the Lightning Protocol devs. And by the way, that goes down to the Bitcoin devs who we should all be supporting. We're trying to figure out how to do a better job of that ourselves. As we are freeloading off of Bitcoin and the Lightning Protocol and building this app layer on top of these two things. And I know you guys know Ryan Gentry, and you've talked to folks at Lightning Labs. There's other implementations. There's C Lightning. There's Async in France. There's a really light node client coming out of Japan. So there's really cool stuff happening. And we're just scratching the surface and just one thing that's happening in one part of the Lightning Network. So to people who are new to this, don't think of what we're doing here as all inclusive of what's happening in Lightning. Tons of other stuff happening. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
Yeah, so I was just going to say, so that understanding that structure, Dave, to what you're asking about, what does Relay do, is really important. So that gets you, and if you are running Relay and your node and you have a channel, then you can operate over this free protocol. And you're a full-fledged Lightning node on the platform, on the network. So that could be from a Raspberry Pi, and there are tons of people now running Umbrals, running running Raspberry Pi Blitz. All good stuff, right? Different pros and cons to each. None of them are simple yet. So if anyone tells you they're simple, I had trouble doing it. People have trouble doing this. So if you're thinking, hey, it must be me, no, it's not you. And what we're gonna do, if there's interest, and maybe hit people up on the Mastodon group, is if I talk to Gonzalo about running a once a week video chat or just some meetup or something online where everyone who wants to run one at home, we could spend an hour answering any questions.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Channels.
That's a good idea.
Just kind of doing like a build party. So
I've seen, what do we have, Dave? Probably like 5 or 6 devs now who have set up a variety of different types of nodes at home.
About right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's been beautiful to watch, you know, all the struggles, all the things that can go wrong, even, if, you know, hey, I set up a Raspberry Blitz, but I don't have the chain on my drive, you know, 2 days later. Okay. All of these minor things, NAT, port forwarding, et cetera. But yeah, of course, it's all going to get easier. How are you positioning Sphinx Chat in the market? Is there a category that it fits under? Because it doesn't really feel like it. It's a category all by itself.
Yeah, I mean, I try to think about that because when you're trying to describe what you're working on to friends, it's a little bit confusing. So they're saying, you know, I have friends who say, so wait, you guys are a podcast app now?
Yeah.
Exactly. And so, you know, a lot of people say wallet. I think all of those terms can really limit what, if you have a system that's this new, to use a dated analogy can sometimes be a problem, right? It can limit what people think you can do or what you think you can do yourself, right? So what we're trying to do is, if I think back to a couple of things, it's the wallet part is really about the ability to earn. Right now, hopefully, this is generating sats to podcast index.
Oh, it's generating sats. Let me just say something about that quick.
Yeah.
Go ahead. So one of the things that we came up with was this split. So you're sending, you know, payments, you're splitting up a per minute payment to podcaster-defined recipients. And just to give you an idea, because the numbers are very low, it's micropayments, and we only have, you know, what, maybe a dozen people or so who are really, I don't know. I mean, no one knows exactly how much. I think Marty has a lot of listeners, but it's limited. So one of the guys his name is Neil. He's the Clip Custodian nickname, and he's been creating like 10 to 12 really high quality clips for me to play on No Agenda every single show. And so I gave him a 5% split in the value block. And Neil, you know, I don't know how sophisticated he is, but I sent him an invite. He got set up on Sphinx Chat. I said, you know, can you give me your node? He was able to figure that out. Dave put it into the block. And now, he says, it's Adams, it's such because he will do this for free. He doesn't need anything for it. He says it's like mental fuel of motivation, like a micro dosing, little bits of goodness every single time, because that each payment, each streaming payment represents someone who is enjoying what he was also a part of. I really get goosebumps when I say it, because I know that if this is times 1,000, people are going to be making some real money, and it's going to be really crazy.
I want to see it. Yeah. I love to see it. That's the freedom to earn. And here's the thing, too, that we shouldn't ignore. So for everyone who's doing podcasting or any content creation, but for now podcasting, the audience was limited by the payment system, right? So if you want audience support, how do I get you the support? Well, do you have Venmo? Do you have PayPal?
Cash App?
Credit cards? Cash App? You just cut out what percentage of the universe, of the world, right? Can't pay you. So you have an audience. Someone in a suburb outside of Manila is listening to a podcast and getting a lot of value out of it. Now you can capture that value. That person actually, I think, experiences it differently when they are supporting the thing they appreciate. I actually think the listening experience is better when you know that you are contributing to the whole.
That is proven. 14 years of No Agenda proves people really want to pay. It makes them feel good. They want to pay something that's meaningful to them, which can be numerology or just how much money they can afford. And this is, I think, how this fits into Bitcoin. I'm going to use the term space, is it's inherent to people who are switched on to Bitcoin to be philanthropic and be open, and the freedom they feel of owning and controlling their own money and sending it like a text message, because that's what it is. It's like, wow, I just sent you a money, but it didn't go through a whole bunch of other people. You know, I didn't have to do a whole bunch of things. It's a very good experience.
Well, going back to that, that's about personal sovereignty and responsibility. And if you are going to take that on, that means that you can't be a spectator alone. You have to be the man in the arena. You have to step in. And that could be just streaming stats as you listen to a podcast, right? We're not asking anyone to go into battle here, but it's you need to act.
Yeah.
Things aren't going to, advertisers will let you consume passively. Sure, that's one model you can exist in. But I think that in the back of people's mind, it doesn't feel right. And I think that once you start to see something new, and you start to feel that, it feels different. And that's when I listen to, Marty's podcast or your podcast through ThinkStrat. I said, wow, I didn't predict that it would actually change the listening experience. And I feel better.
Oh, yeah.
So, it does. Yeah, it totally does. I felt that when I first started using Sphinx, the Sphinx app as well. And we talked about it on the show of how very quickly, within a couple of days, I started to feel guilty if there was a show on Sphinx Chat that was that I knew it was there, but I was listening in a different app. So I would flip back to switch back to Sphinx Chat and start listening just purely so I could know that I was sending them value, no matter how small it was. Let me say this. I on that whole idea of free and free versus pay, I actually wrote a blog about this forever ago. I think that we may misunderstand that issue. I think we tend to mentally see it as a spectrum. So where you have free on one side and you have very expensive on the other side, and we think of it like a long spectrum, a single line. But I really think it's more like a circle, and so where the ends of the spectrums bend around and begin to meet again at the bottom, so that you have free on the left and priceless on the right. And those things are actually closer together than you can think of.
Yes.
And so I think that's where the social media and the freemium stuff, I think they operate in that psychological space, because if they can give you a service for free, you'll be willing to give away things that are actually priceless in order to use it, because the idea of free and priceless are not opposite ends of a spectrum. They're actually, they're hard to discern the difference mentally, because there's not really a cost you can put on either one of them. And so I think that idea, like if you actually split it out and take away free and say that this does cost something, it helps you to actually place a value on it and say, okay, this is what I'm not willing to give up these things in my life, like my personal information, like my contacts list on a phone if it's Clubhouse. All these things that you're not willing to give away when the thing actually costs money, you may be willing to give it away when it's free, because you just, your mind has, the human mind, I think, has a difficult time making sense out of something that's free, as far as how do you value that in relation to something else.
It's like the infinity philosophy state or the zero state, you know. Yeah, Dave is microdosing sats, I think. But no, that's exactly.
Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen.
I see exactly what you mean, and they do meet back, right? And I'm actually just picturing a graphic. We should put that into a graphic, right? You do come full circle back when you get priceless and free are neighbors, not opposites, right? But I to me, that whole going back to the whole thing of freedom to earn, right? That should be a human right, and it shouldn't be limited by the place you were born necessarily, right? I feel like that's going to be an artifact, hopefully, of the future. Someone's got something interesting to say in some random place that no one's been to, and they're going to be able to collect an audience of tons of people around the world and make a living from that because they're providing value. And if we can remove those friction points, I think we all benefit from kind of adding their contributions to the idea soup instead of getting the same ones from the same people around us. So the borderless part, I think, really is important. And I think we'll end up with a more interesting kind of exchange here, right, if it happens. This is the whole importance of decentralization. And this is, you guys turned us on to RSS. Like, I didn't really pay attention to RSS since, I think when it came out, we all looked at it and we're all hacking away on things. But amazing that this becomes the foundation for decentralized.
Decentralized RSS is such a beautiful thing. It's so obvious why Google killed their feed reader. You cannot compete with it. It's too good. In a decentralized fashion.
Someone pointed out to me, though, that did you know that, and I haven't played with it, but Medium and Substack offer RSS versions?
Yes, they do.
Which is kind of interesting.
Substack is doing podcasts now.
Oh.
Yeah, they're on my list. They need to have a freaking node. Kidding me?
This might be the next board meeting right here.
It is a board meeting, Paul. We take everything you say serious, and it's on the record.
Yeah, you're an honorary C-level executive right now.
What was I going to say? It's pretty amazing that this, like, decades old, or I don't know how old RSS is, but seems like it's been around.
Yeah, it's legacy.
It's like kind of this perfect system that's already sort of been there for a long time, and it's sort of creating this bastion of free speech. Like, no matter what, you're not going to be able to necessarily take down a file. You could even email someone an RSS file.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, exactly.
The multimodality of it makes it so there's not really any way to, you know, cancel it.
Evan, I have a couple of questions for you specifically. The first one is, when can I, on like No Agenda, say, everybody needs to go get Sphinx Chat right now? Because that's what I've been waiting for. I've been waiting to be able to say that, and I understand the issues of me saying that, because I just don't know how does this scale.
Paul is going to tell you today, and I'll tell you next week. That's kind of how we've been going, but literally next week. This time it's for real. Next week.
Oh wow!
Okay. Although Paul will say today,
we just. I think literally right before this episode started, Evan pushed the multi-tenant version of Relay out to GitHub. So don't anyone go turn it on right now. I'm not advocating that. But we need to...
You're not as much of a cowboy as I thought you were, Paul.
Well, believe me. I'm suppressing that instinct as much as I can. But, so the Umbro guys need time to update the release. They don't have an ad hoc release system on the App Store yet that they have. So they have these apps, and we can't, as app, presence on their dashboard, we don't have the ability to push updates to their nodes, which is probably smart for them, right? And so we just told them yesterday, hey, you guys, we have a new version coming out. We need to do the same thing with anyone else is doing stuff.
How does that work? I mean, so if a whole bunch of people go get the Sphinx Chat app, I mean, I'm just talking about listeners who want to support the show. Will they, it's seamless to them about any upgrades you've done, all that stuff is, it's all in the background and they can just go ahead and I guess I would presume purchase their node for a couple bucks and then get up and running.
Well, we're going to offer two different types of nodes. One is meant for podcasters, and that's, we're calling those dedicated. And that means you have a channel and you're running the LND software and Relay software on a virtual machine.
Gotcha.
And you can do that it's exactly what you have now. That's what you have on your Raspberry Pi Blitz and Umbral. So you have a channel. Think of it as I have a channel, because a channel is a Bitcoin transaction. Bitcoin has limited real estate. You cannot create a million channels a day on the Bitcoin blockchain, even if you wanted to, right?
Right.
And so what the virtual node does, what we're calling Lite or a virtual node, is that you have the ability to be a participant on someone else's node. So in Bitcoin, they call this the Uncle Jim model, where someone you know and somewhat trust is running a node and has a channel, and you are piggybacking off their system. All your content is still private. You can still do everything you want on the Lightning Network, but you are running from running on someone else's node and sharing their channel, which is communicating out.
Gotcha. So that's, think that's of it how like, you scale it. That's how you scale it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So
yeah,
I think everything like is this. Still,
it's all still end to end encrypted, basically. So it's not like Uncle Jim can read your messages, but
which is real creepy in my Uncle Jim's case. Want to read your messages.
And that was LND 12.
I don't know where that term.
Is that where that
term came from?
It did.
Go ahead.
Yeah, because LND 12 has this HTLC interceptor feature. And then, so now we're able to create these private channels.
I'm just writing
that
down.
May or may not be real channels. So HTLC. There's a lot of pieces to it.
HTLC are you gonna drop that interceptor. Are you going to drop that at dinner? Just to sound killer?
Yeah, you should.
Absolutely.
We're going to have HTLC interceptor t-shirts made. But,
I like it.
Credit goes to, I believe the Breeze guys who you guys are talking to, worked with Lightning Labs on the original thing. I may be getting the history wrong, but, that is just a feature of the underlying protocol that we're using to help people get on board. So,
well, they probably needed that because they're not a full online,
there's no
online
way.
Node.
There's
all
no
the
way
time,
they can
right?
do it. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, if you're running a node, they run mobile nodes, I believe, and but I'm not an expert on it, but they run mobile nodes, and so sometimes if your phone's off, the interceptor can capture the payment on the way in, I believe.
Wow, like a watchtower.
Yeah. Kind of like that. Yeah, yeah, it is a little bit like that, maybe. So watchtowers are more like, hey, is someone trying to cheat me out of my channel? But right. So think about this model for a second. If we were to go the most private version and then work our way back to the hosted versions, but let's say you with your Raspberry Pi Blitz, if you were running this multi-tenant version, you could say to your No Agenda listeners, hey, sign up on my node as a virtual node. They would provide Bitcoin. They would, or, you know, they would either buy it or send it. Now, what they would have is a full-on address, the app and everything. They'd be listening to the podcast, talking on Tribes, doing everything, but they wouldn't have their own channel. They would be running off of your
own. Right. And how many virtual nodes, or, you know, how many, if I'm Uncle Jim, how many kids can I have?
Well, we haven't quite really tested the limits, but hopefully thousands and thousands.
Oh, well, that'll be my job then. Hello. Hello.
There we go.
Test the limits.
Now, are you guys setting
we'll have a bounty. If you can break it, you'll win some reward.
Bad idea, Paul Etoy. Bad idea, man. I'm an expert. I'm an expert at breakage.
It'll be worth it. It'll be worth it.
That's very exciting. That is super exciting. And now, will this also be available, like, as a an add-on to any of the Voltage nodes, or anyone who wants to go more with a hosted solution?
We're talking to Graham. I mean, I was pinging with him yesterday. So anyone with a Voltage node can run one of these multi-tenant servers because they have a channel.
Fucking love this community. This is so cool,
but it's also, I mean, this is also why it's so difficult to roll stuff out, because there's all these people with different app versions and different relay versions, different LND versions.
No idea
who's really on there. So,
But Evan, also different business models, different philosophy. Well, there's a general philosophy, and that's, I think, what pulls it all together. I am constantly amazed, you know, how, you know, we were looking for a kind of a semi-hosted solution and bumped into Tim over at LNPay. And he's like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll throw some API together. And everyone just kind of puts it all in there, and sats start flowing. And everyone says, oh, okay, I'm getting some sats here from either a split or a routing fee. And everyone sees where they can benefit from it and grow. And it's just, it's so, and I don't know how old you are, Evan, but it's so analogous to the early days. I'm talking, you know, 90, for me, it was like 93, 94. When the web just, you know, the NCSA Mosaic browser just came along, but how people were all kind of working together, even with peering agreements at the network level. I mean, it's so analogous to that.
Yeah, I was a baby at the time, so.
Well, but, I mean, did you see Marnix posted that like layout that showed all the node interconnects on the Mastodon? He took all the podcaster nodes that are listed. He's constantly monitoring the podcast index to see who has value blocks and where the nodes and what node pub keys they are.
That's good.
And so then he does analysis on that. And so he put together this map that shows all the interconnections between all the nodes. And it's cool, man. It's like a complete podcast. It's like a podcast routing network within Lightning itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, cool. It's cool.
And, you know, I was like, I got channels to your routing node. I think you got a routing node at Voltage. So I've opened a channel there and everyone's opening channels. It's really quite interesting.
So the ideal state here would be that podcaster sets up node, get Voltage home, whatever. And in the beginning, we're running this to make sure we can work out the kinks. They could, start a node, bring on these light node users who will probably be their listeners, but don't necessarily have to be. Someone could join the no agenda node and then listen to Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
Of course.
They're just like a normal user. And then what you could do is, so now you're running all of these users and then they want to decide to run their own node. They have a real Lightning pub key and can leave.
They can leave and then set their own up. Right. Right.
Yep. And then they can get their own channel, which is great. And we've always wanted that portability. So if someone has a hosted node and wants to go to a home node, they can, right? And then this also allows you to do some neat stuff with forwarding and stuff like that, too. So if you have one of these virtual nodes, you can actually just forward it to another node.
Oh, my God.
It's kind of interesting.
No way.
Because now you can sign up for something using a completely different pub key that no one knows that's your normal pub key. It's a forwarding address, right? Ooh,
tricky.
So it gets to be all kinds of fun things here. And so... so that, I think, is, so that will remove this whole issue of, can I get one of these nodes and can I get an invite, which we're not trying to be exclusive about this. We're literally running a server and doing a Bitcoin transaction for every single user on this network running a home node. So this way, it can bring people on. They are dependent on that node. They could kick you off. They could go down. Like your Umbral or your Raspberry Pi Blitz Atom could go down, and all your friends are yelling at you as Uncle Jim, right? So there, it's not, you know, it's like the early days of ISPs when it was in closets and apartments, right? And a bunch of modems running on a rack.
Believe me, I run a Mastodon server with 10,000 users, and I know what happens when it goes down.
It's emails.
Not fun.
It's not fun.
Wow.
If you think about the friction point, just one real quick, I want to make sure that we talk about some of the main friction points about running one of these things, because this is a message to podcasters thinking about doing this. is that now you have a place to interact. Podcasting has not had community very well, right? So now you can interact with people who are self-selecting to be your most loyal listeners because they want to contribute value for what you're providing, right? Now, Adam, you run into this. You're going to get sats. It's going to pile up with the Lightning Network. If all of the sats are on your side of the channel,
channel's borked. You got to rebalance.
You have a clog in the pipe, right? And so with Lightning Labs and the tools that they're coming out with, they have these new things of auto loop out. So
some of the things auto loop we'll be adding, out. Oh my God. Yeah. That's so smart. Cool.
So if you have this kind of, first class problem of having too many sats, you can set it and say, hey, if I hit this percentage on my side of the channel,
rebalance,
then I would like Bitcoin to be sent on chain to this backup address. And then you can send it to that address.
Yeah, because that function used to be done by a guy named Paul Itoy, who I would then email and say, dude, my channel's borked. Like, liquidity, brother.
And then I'd be in my car with a laptop opening Lightning channels, you know? So.
Yeah, I think we've got ten channels to Marty's node because they keep all ending up on that side. So
yeah, Marty's on fire, man. He's on fire.
And so the channel issue is the second thing. So another thing that's coming out is, or it's already out, is pool. So
yeah,
if you're a podcaster and you don't want to lock up to open a Bitcoin, a Lightning channel, it requires Bitcoin. I think of it as it's escrowed in this account between you and the other node. So if you don't want to put $5,000 worth of Bitcoin in a hot wallet on a node between you and someone else,
you can rent it.
You can actually pay someone, right?
Yeah.
Whatever it is, whatever. Yeah. I've seen APRs of 3 to 10%. Let's say it's called 5. I feel like is a great number to get to. You can rent someone else's Bitcoin for 5%. So you could be paying $30 a month for your Get Voltage node, $20 a month for your channel, and you could be hosting thousands of Light nodes who are your listeners.
Yep.
And that $50 is nothing, right? It's just, hey, it's part of the cost of doing business.
It's interesting.
In order to receive.
I have two asks in pool that have been there for 6 weeks. I can't get my offers to be taken up by anybody. I've been like, come on, man, I got low APR. Come on, buy now.
We're giving it away.
Yeah, practically giving the channel away. That marketplace still has to heat up a bit.
It's coming.
The interface is very complicated still, so.
Yeah, boy. And they're making huge improvements on that front. But I think that demand here could come from podcasters. So again, I think it all comes down to podcaster deciding, right? And then getting those channels and then having this flow of value coming through, then they discover other podcasts. Now they might be on the No Agenda node, but they're listening to 10 podcasts. And they're streaming sats. I think it could be a great system.
And can you, as Uncle Jim, do you also take advantage of the network fees that are sent through these nodes?
You can set them to whatever you want, but it'll probably be competitive, right? I'm skeptical that Lightning routing fees, at least in the short term, will add up to a whole lot. But you never know, right? I mean, I think there will be competition for routing fees.
There has to be.
I think that the what you'll pay to rent Bitcoin for channels will also go down over time. Right? It's just competition. And that's the way it should work. It'll consolidate.
Yeah.
Evan, how much
of that LND development are you responsible for? Are you doing pull requests directly on the LND code base at all?
No, we are just using it, basically. I mean, there's so many other things to build on our side. Yeah. But we do talk to them pretty often and just hear what's coming, and they can get feedback from us.
It was Roast Beef and Ryan who helped suggest the multi-tenant solution, which we had been hemming and hawing about for a while, but they just put the pieces together in such a nice way that... Six weeks ago or something, maybe eight weeks ago that we had this phone call.
Yeah, I mean there's plenty of systems that basically send a user ID in the TLV of a Lightning transaction. Like, I mean, there's a bunch of other projects out there that do that, but every transaction is still going to the same pub key.
Right.
So what we really wanted is the ability to start in multi-tenant mode and move off.
Right.
So we're really basically, it's based on the routing hint and the private channel concept.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a real, key pair from the beginning. So you can move off at any time and there's not any, I mean, you don't have to tell all your friends, okay, my pub key is changing now, right, or whatever.
Right. You can just take that. Yeah, perfect.
But you could be kicked off, right? So we want to make sure everyone knows this is not the most sovereign way to do it, right?
Right.
Doing it from your house or doing it on your own is always going to be better. So, but not everyone's ready to go spend $200 on hardware, put it together, and
correct,
do all that.
Just deal with it.
It's
yeah.
just, and then if you get a taste of it, then you can move on.
Paul, I want to be sensitive of your time. Do you have to go? Because I have a couple more questions for Evan.
Yeah, I just got a phone call, so I've got five more minutes, and then okay. I've got to run. But.
I wanted to ask Evan, you know, we have an entire namespace with a whole bunch of features. I know you guys are busy. Do you see those being integrated anytime soon into the podcast part of Sphinx Chat?
Oh, yes. We're getting back to the podcast stuff here. We're basically heads down on this routing hints and multi-tenant stuff. But I mean, just to go back to like the multimodal thing that is the Bitcoin ecosystem, I love to see that there's other apps, you know, like Breeze integrating podcasts and doing similar things. And I think, I mean, we've always talked about Sphinx sort of being like the pro tools for this, for the podcasters themselves, right? So
we're
definitely going to build in actually hosting your podcast files on the meme server.
Oh, whoa. Stop, young man. Do tell. This is interesting.
I mean, we want to make it completely, basically, self-sovereign that way.
Wow.
It's great that you can link out to these other systems. But what would be even better is hosting your files yourself on your Sphinx node and actually authenticating the access to those files using keys that would be sent as Lightning transactions. So we already do that for memes. Like if you buy an image on Sphinx, that's a file, but you can't decrypt it until you have the key for it, basically.
Is that LSAT how you do that?
It is not. We sort of just built our own thing and called it LDAT.
So cool. I could see that being an immediate solution for true private member only feeds.
Yeah. Goodbye, Patreon.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Right.
Very interesting.
And then being able to see all the stats, you know, who's listening or not even who's listening, but like, when are people listening? When are people boosting?
Yeah. This is podcasters don't even know what's going to hit them. And it doesn't even exclude advertisers, actually. It makes it much better if you want to provide statistics for, you know, for what you're doing. And we'll have, you know, listening statistics, which is just a complete upgrade from any other interactive agency bureau certification mumbo jumbo. This is going to be the real deal. It's great. And so, you know, of course, as someone hosting files on their own node, you know, that brings a whole, I mean, hosting of podcasts brings a whole bunch of shit along with it, which will be interesting to see how that scales for people who are doing that all self-hosted.
Right. But you can also, for example, use our meme server node.
Mm-hmm.
And pay for it. We don't charge anything for it now, but we could, you know, charge a millionth of a cent.
You fuckers.
And so it's like, you know, the infrastructure can be centralized, but the incentives are decentralized because you're just paying a millionth of a cent to access this file. I mean, it can all just sort of be more fair.
You just got the attention of several guys I know.
Nice.
Who went?
Yeah, you know what? I listened to your guys' last week episode last night.
Yeah.
And I liked what you were saying about, I mean, I always sort of hated advertising, but it was an interesting part where you were saying, you know, advertising isn't really the problem. Like, it's not necessarily the worst thing in the world to put put out there, like, hey, I've got this cool thing, check it out, to my to your friends and
sure,
stuff.
Sure.
The negative part is the machine that's behind it, right? Yeah. It's the algos.
Yes.
That are profit driven.
Yeah, so exactly.
By creating basically balanced incentives, we don't need these algorithms, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Holy crap. That's big. That's very, very big. And I think the part that really hits home is the idea of quickly authenticated access based upon a payment. You know, certainly for private feeds, it can negate a whole, but it it's you just blow up the Patreon model. It's just exploded. It's gone. It's gone.
Yep.
And people who are willing to
put a credit card number in, you know, why have your email in there at all?
Right.
Like,
right.
You don't even need to know necessarily who these people are. If you know 1,000 people are enjoying your podcast, that's great.
Yeah. The way I've always looked at the value for value model is, can I pay my rent this month? Okay. I've got enough listeners. That's what it is. It literally comes down to that. Paul, you want any parting words? Because I know it's your son's birthday, so I want to let you go.
No, I think you're in good hands. So. Just appreciate the work you guys are doing, and open it up to any podcasters who want to do this. But we're gonna literally, when we pushed it today, we'll have the podcaster wallet integration that Dave did, and we have it down. We timed it to about 40 seconds. So if you have your podcast index ID number, and we can do this with you, we can give you an invite with that ID number. And it takes about 40 seconds. You download the app from the App Store. We're out on the App Store right now, Google Play,
or all
you
right.
can download the APK.
Yes.
and then you scan that specific invite code, and then while you're entering your name and setting up Sphinx Chat, it actually creates the tribe with the artwork, the name, the RSS feed, everything pulling from Podcast Index. And then by the time you open the dashboard, your tribe that you own for your podcast is set up and waiting for you in your dashboard when you open the app. And you're ready to go.
Dave,
and then with the virtual nodes, we can
scale.
Likewise, you can scan a QR code that will your listeners will auto join your tribe. And so
beautiful.
When they open the app, they are in the tribe that they intended to be in the first place,
that's
which is to
beautiful.
Listen to your podcast.
That's beautiful. Dave,
and so
Dave,
just
trying
to working? Take the friction points out.
Dave, is this working end to end from Podcaster Wallet?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is basically just the thing that we, you know, this is the same thing we set up a while back.
It just works. You
know. Yeah.
But now the difference is with these nodes, we can now say, hey, with every podcaster who sets up, we will give you 20 invites day one. So invite your 20 closest people. And then we can even give invites every day, every week. People can give them away on their podcast or on Twitter. It's not spinning up a node in a channel every time anymore.
All right. So when I download the APK after the show today, I can publish a QR code that people can scan with the app from the new app from the App Store.
Because you have I just described the new podcaster experience. We can give
legacy.
You the one that you already have. So you'll get
your legacy.
You'll get a QR code. You don't get to do that fun setup process.
Right,
you'll have
right.
two tribes, but you can get. We'll give you a QR code that's specific to your tribe.
And
so
I find
when people
yeah,
scan that.
That's in
it.
The
yeah.
new app.
That's it.
Oh, my
well,
God.
That's yeah. That part's been there, right? What's been the tough part is how do you give everybody nodes that wants a node, right?
So, yeah, so good to have that problem finally solved.
Congratulations,
it's a relief for y'all too. Yeah,
yeah. yeah.
And it's about 3 hours old, so take that with a grain of salt. You know, there will be pain. So
Paul, Dave, and I feel a little bit responsible for this necessary upgrade. We feel that we did come in and break you a little bit, just with flowing channels. But I
we're
want
sending you the bill. Don't worry.
Oh,
we're
I know. I know. As you know, I've offered several times. I wanted to thank you personally because you've been such a motivating, powerful force in this entire value for value model. You have given me incredible insight and Dave as well, of course. Your philosophy, everything about you, which carries through the organization, has just been fucking delightful. It's amazing to work with another organization without any true business relationship. We've signed no contracts, you know, we're all kind of on the same page. It's inherent to Bitcoin that that's not necessarily needed anymore, but just really, man, you have a vision, and I congratulate you on everything you've gotten done so far. And you know, I look forward to working with you and the entire team there for a long time on this.
Thanks so much. That really does mean a ton. And it is, you know, as well as I do, it's Evan and the team behind here that's doing it. So I'm just appreciative to these guys for what they do. I mean, it's amazing stuff. So
no, believe
me. And we're going to blow people away with stuff to come. So.
Yeah, we're going to really suck up to Evan once you're gone. So don't worry about it.
Excellent. Well, just tell me what you guys decide to do afterwards. I appreciate it.
All right, Paul. Happy birthday for your son there. All right, man. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye, Paul.
Evan, a question for you, just because I can't help not asking it. I grew up in the Netherlands, and although it would be spelled with a V, Veenstra, is that from those parts of the woods?
Yep, it's Friesian, so up there.
Ah, Friesland Boppe.
Exactly. I wish I knew any Dutch, but my grandma does speak Fries,
mm-hmm.
and my dad speaks Dutch. He kind of has an accent. So.
Wow. Okay. So, but you were born in the U.S.?
Yes.
All right. Interesting. Yeah. Veenstra. Normally it's a V, and Frisian is, it's almost like Welsh. It's a dialect. In fact, Welsh and Frisian are, I think they can understand each other. It's like this.
Oh, yeah?
It's like this sect of people that have all these little spots in the world where they have their own cool little language.
It's got a super interesting history. They never had a feudal type system.
That's right.
With lords and serfs and stuff. They all just got together.
Yep.
So you're free. Your freedom of association. You've been a Bitcoiner.
Bitcoiner for birth. Exactly.
Exactly. It's a lot of the same, you know, philosophy. Like, just come together when we need to. But other than that, that we're all individuals and kind of like the family.
Very cool.
Unit is the core of the culture. So.
How did you come to Sphinx? Like, I mean, I guess that's not the question I want to ask. I guess the question I want to ask is, how did you get into the development position you are? Like, what does your development timeline look like?
Well, it's long and circuitous. To tell you the truth, I sort of grew up something of a Luddite. I mean, I was like the last of my friends to get a smartphone, and I only signed up for Twitter last year. Like, I have never really been a big Facebook user. But when was it? It was 2010. I decided to travel a bunch, and I spent 8 months in Nepal teaching English.
Wow.
And awesome experience. But surprisingly, the biggest thing that really hit me was how technology was completely transforming people's lives. Like they would take their cell phones and climb to the top of a hill and give each other missed calls, like and not pick it up. And they would make agreements. Like, okay, two missed calls means this, three missed calls means that. So they wouldn't have to pay the service provider.
Wow.
So literally, nice. They had this Morse code of missed calls system, and that would save them, you know, 12 hours needing to walk to the next village and back. So it just sort of blew my mind. Like, even the most decrepit and old crappy technology is such an amazing improvement from not that. And I mean, growing up where everyone is digital native, everyone's on the internet, you know, I sort of took it all for granted. But that kind of opened my eyes to the internet and how awesome it is. So when I came back from that trip, I actually started a Nepalese food cart with my friend who's from Nepal. I made a WordPress site. That was my first coding experience. That was like 2012, and went down the WordPress rabbit hole for a few years, making like websites for small businesses and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually got into JavaScript, got into web development, and yeah, just totally became addicted to coding.
What language do you spend most of your time in now? Is it JavaScript?
Yep. I mean, it's all TypeScript, but yeah, JavaScript is TypeScript, same. But a lot of our stuff is built in Go, like the Tribe and the meme stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like Go for back-end development.
Okay.
And I'm learning Rust. That's a really cool language.
Is that something you're going to use at Sphinx, or is that something you're just doing as a side project?
I mean, it would be great to have kind of like a something of a dream, but sort of wrapping up Relay as this Rust Lightning thing that would make it much, much more efficient and be able to run not on a $20 Raspberry Pi, but on like a 5 cent, thing the size of a nickel. Like that's
get it down to bare metal. Yeah.
Right. Like it's probably not quite possible yet, but one day it will be. So yeah, I'm trying to even remember how I got into Bitcoin. My friend in 2016 got me into it. And I definitely saw the potential for like, okay, this could possibly be a whole new global financial system.
Mm-hmm.
But until micro payments and Lightning came around, I didn't really see how it could be used by regular people.
Well, it probably could. I mean, until Lightning came around, it really couldn't that much. I mean,
right. Like you can buy it and hold it. Cool. Like it's a hedge against inflation or whatever, but it's not necessarily something that's going to help change the world like the internet in general did. But micropayments, I do feel like I said earlier, it totally changes the system because you just don't need to keep a persistent record of who is interacting with your service online. If you're streaming value one way and whatever service you're providing the other way, then, I mean, if the customer stops streaming sats, you stop streaming your side. So you just don't need that credit card number.
This may have been a Paul question, but do you think Sphinx will ever do any sort of onboarding from fiat, or is that something y'all just want to avoid altogether?
Yeah, I mean, we do have a little button in there to add from Cash App, so.
Oh, I didn't know that. I don't think I've seen that.
That's basically how we do it. It doesn't work all the time.
Yeah. Well, the reason I ask is because, like, currently, you know, my flow to get funds and to get Lightning into my Sphinx app or anywhere really is I go Strike through a debit card, and then send that money to wherever I want it, and so that is like basically zero fees. And it gets me my Lightning without having to go through any Bitcoin steps at all. But the problem is outside of the US, you know, Strike's not really available everywhere. Yep. So that, you know, there is for people, we ran into this with Martin from Podfriend, for example. He was trying to get some, well, and I think we ran into this with Galerma too, you know, just to even test their apps. They were like, well, I got to onboard somewhere. And so we ended up sending them some Lightning. Just, you know, $20 worth of Lightning just to get them going. And, you know, that while the onboarding problem, I think, is being solved, I just wonder how deep y'all were going, you know, what y'all's plans were around that. If y'all ever plan to get into that game, or if you're just going to be like, meh, nah, we don't want to do that.
Yeah, I know it's a little stressful for Paul to think about, well, like, are we going to be a banking?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, like, does this make us, if we're onboarding fiat, does that make us like a money transfer company or whatever? So we're not working on that yet at this point.
Yeah.
But I think he is talking to different legal advice just to see what that would imply.
It's a big step. I mean, cause then you got all the regulations, all the KYC stuff. Yeah. It's a big deal. It's not something to be taken lightly at all.
And of course the limit is like, whatever it is, it's in dollars. So
yeah,
if we're doing like 5,000 sats, like maybe that's under the limit today, but who knows what it is tomorrow. So,
and that's, to me, that's the genius of Strike, is they're like avoiding the whole conversion thing. You get it in there and it's you're moving Lightning, but it's all denominated in currency. So you're not really, you're avoiding that conversion step until you send it out. And then it's fairly genius the way that does, because you never see how many sats you have in Strike. It's always fiat.
And it fluctuates, or are they just, no, as soon as you just send it out, it's finally then at that point.
Yeah. If you buy $20, if you put $20 into your Strike wallet, it shows up as $20 US forever. no matter what Bitcoin does underneath. And so they really are only using Lightning as a transport mechanism.
Yeah.
So cool. It avoids having to do those conversion swaps, which brings in another host of regulations. But then if I send it to a Lightning app, it comes in as Lightning. It's mm-hmm. beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, we've always been on the train of like, it's a new standard. That make everyone think in terms of sats, but who knows if that is ever going to happen.
Well, I mean, I think in sats more and more. It's been, a good 9 months to a year. And there's a lot of places where my brain just starts to make the connection. So it does grow on you. But also, you know, I'm used to euros and, and dealing with that often. These cuck bucks in Australia and Scandinavia, which are, they're like one Canadian dollar is like 3 cents US.
poor James Cridley.
Yeah, really. Really. Well, Evan, this is really congratulations, man, on all this work. And because, I know a lot of the developer goes into this and the love shows, man.
Yeah, it's been a wild ride, honestly. And it has been great working with Paul. I mean, he's definitely involved all the time, but he's also just sort of like, do what you're gonna do, are you gonna use LSATs? And I was right. I don't know, I'd probably just build my own thing. I'm which of course it's good to standardize, it's good to have standards, but I'm sure you've seen the cartoon where there's like 10 competing standards and then they create the one standard to rule them all, and now there's 11 competing standards. So,
believe me, that one's that cartoon has been posted on the on the podcast namespace more than once.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I've always just been like, let's build it. Whatever form it takes. I mean, LSAT is awesome, but it was a little bit pre Keysend, and you don't necessarily need some of those. I don't know. With the Keysend, you can do things just directly. So,
well, do you, Evan? Do you want to stick around and listen and for the donation segment, and we can you can kind of listen to how many people are involved in this whole thing?
Sure. Yeah, I'll just be on in the background here.
This is a value for value production, not just this podcast, but podcastindex.org, the gathering, the watering hole at podcastindex.social. The GitHub, all of that is part of Podcasting 2.0. We are upgrading podcasting, and the value for value is very simple. If you're listening to this, if you see any value you get out of the project, if you want to contribute, and we're always looking for the three T's, your time, your talent, your treasure. We got a lot of people contributing a crap load of time and talent, Evan included. For those who want to sponsor us and support us financially, we make that possible in a couple of ways, podcastindex.org. Big yellow donate button down at the bottom of that page is also a place to
red.
I'm sorry, button. Red. I'm. I have too many shows that I do. you can also get on a subscription payment schedule with your Lightning there. And if you're in one of the Podcasting 2.0 certified apps, you'll see a donate button pop up. And Dave, what have we? What kind of treasure have we received this week?
We got two donors this week. One of them is Myron Weber. He donated $66.78. I'm not sure what the, here he goes. His message explains it. He says, here's a donation in the amount of a proprietary magic number. I'm a co-host of a Mental Supermodels podcast. So he gives the website is mentalsupermodels.com. co-host of Mental Supermodels, a podcast exploring the theory and practice, art and science of mental modeling for problem solving and decision making.
Oh, wow.
That's less exciting than I thought it was.
I'm at the website already. I'm like, let me see. Where's the Mental Supermodels?
Send pictures. I've discovered your awesome work, and I'm trying to figure out how I can help with the time and talent. Since this exhausts my treasure at the moment, is there a guide for how to supercharge my plain old podcast to be 2.0 certified? There is, yes. I don't need a lot. Just point me in the right direction, and I'll document it along the way to create a better guide for the next folks down the trail.
Well,
Myron, that's in the works.
Yeah, but you can always go to newpodcastapps.com and select hosts. And there are a number of hosts who already provide a lot of the features of the podcast namespace. So that would be, if you want, that's, you can get started right away or migrate, or there's a ton of different places that can help you already today.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for your support.
Christopher Tonkinson gave us $50, and Chris says, go podcasting. I donated previously out of a pure love for podcasts and open source, but this time I'm providing value for a different reason. I soft launched my own new podcast on that stupid proprietary Fruit Dex earlier this week. What is that?
Proprietary what? Fruit Dex?
Fruit Dex. FRUITDEX. Oh, Apple. Apple Podcasts. Ah. Okay. You got me on that one.
Yeah, good one.
Okay, so I soft launched my own new podcast on that stupid proprietary Fruit Dex earlier this week. But this morning I signed up for a podcastindex.org API account and submitted the feed to make it officially live.
All right.
So I felt the compulsion to provide some good old-fashioned fiat in return for services rendered. Keep rocking hard. And he gave us $50.
Thanks, man. Cuck bucks. Yeah, thank you, Chris. We still accept cuck bucks. No problem.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're not ashamed. I wanted to... We have a lot of monthly donors who contribute small amounts.
Yes.
And I never read them.
Could you do that? Do you have the list there? Just run down them real quick?
Yeah, and there is way more than I thought there were.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so these are monthly donors who get... A lot of these are just a $2, $3, $5, $1. But there's a couple of that are $20, $50. We got Paul Saltzman, Keith Gibson, Chad Farrow, Stu Coates, Michael Kimmerer, Leslie Martin, Jeff Miller, Chris Cowan, Martin Moritzen, Jeremy Cavanaugh.
Wait. Martin is donating. Podfriend, yeah. Martin. Wow, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
And Mitch Downey from Podverse.
You guys.
David Norman.
Hypercatcher.
Yep. Soren Mueller. Derek Visker. Christopher Cherubarak. Podverse LLC, Greg Thomas, Jeremy New, Cameron Rose, Charles Current, Clark Sales, Christopher Reamer, Thomas Carson, Dreb Scott, he's a monthly donor.
Yeah.
Jason DiFilippo, Terry Keller, David Midas, Joseph Maraca, Mark Graham, Scott Yalbert, Dwayne Goldie, Larry Hay, Aaron Reno, Pedro Goncalves, Kevin Roa, Droidworks LLC, and Borderline Promotions.
Wow. Great.
That's a
group.
Big list.
That's a great list. No wonder we haven't gone broke yet. We can still pay for stuff. Yeah. That's great. Oh, that's
yeah,
very
I didn't
cool.
realize. I started going through the list and looking up all the monthly donor emails and stuff, and then I went through and subtracted, crossed out the people who had canceled, and there was so many on this list. I had to get a bigger piece of paper.
That is, well, thank you to each and every one of you. And it's you developer guys, man. It's like this. Thank you. I'm always a bit humbled by that.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. So that's our group.
Podcastindex.org. Support the value for value proposition. Maybe as we wrap this up, as we go around the boardroom table, maybe Evan, do you have any questions for us about podcasting 2.0 or anything, any features you'd like to see, or just anything in general about our side?
I just think it's an awesome project, and I'd love to sit down again and just figure out, like you mentioned, there's all these other namespace tags that I'm not even familiar with.
Yeah.
So knowing what's out there, what's happening, what's in the future is going to be cool.
Well, we've got a lot of really smart people working on a lot of great features, and same for you, Evan, newpodcastapps.com. Sphinx Chat is there.
Nice. Evan, right, have you now. Heard of Sphinx Chat?
Have you heard of this? It's pretty nifty what those guys are doing. Well, I can't wait to end the show for once, because I'm ready to go download the new APK. Where is the APK listed on the homepage?
APK has not been updated in a while, but I'm going to upload it later today.
Oh, thank you, because I've been running Graphene OS, and I'm quite partial to it. But I have an iPhone, so I'll get it from the App Store as well to test it there.
Is that F-Droid? Is that what Graphene uses?
Yeah, I mean, you can use any APK file, but there's three different apps. F-Droid would be the one I would hope it would show up in.
Okay. Yeah, well, we're actually going to completely from scratch rebuild Android to support Graphene and stuff. It's built on React Native right now, which is all right, but it's kind of hard to get around some of the standard things. So,
well, it runs on Graphene just fine. I mean, I have no issues. Yeah? Yeah, no issues at all.
Huh, I've had people say they couldn't get the QR scanner to work or something, but maybe that was a different issue.
All user error, no doubt. Damn users don't know what they're doing. Hey, Evan, thank you again, man. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your talent. Everything that that you've been doing, it's been great connecting and great, great getting a little bit of insight into you and Paul as well, and everything that's going on over there. And we'll have to have you back on.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. It's been really fun, and have an awesome week.
Thank you. I can't
weekend.
Wait. Yeah, I'm going to go to the App Store right after this. Dave, anything for you? Anything that we need to do to lighten your load?
No. I'm good. We're gonna have Benjamin Bellamy on next week.
And feed directory. Yeah.
No. Castapod.
Castapod. Yes. Yeah. Oh, good. I get to pressure him.
Yeah.
Where the hell is it, brother?
Yeah, we're gonna have him on, and I don't know if you noticed, but he gave a tag proposal for podcast recommendations.
Yes, I saw that, and I've started to look at it, and that should be, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to deep dive with him.
Yeah, well
that's an algo killer right there, algorithm killer right there.
Yeah, it's exactly. Yeah. I think it's intended that way too.
Totally.
We are pirates. Yeah. We're wrecking everything. Thank you both very much. This has been Podcasting 2.0. We'll be back next week for another board meeting as we discuss what's going on at podcastindex.org. See you then.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting!